ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You're listening to A Big Country. I'm Clint Jasper. Thanks for joining me as we take a trip around Australia with our regional reporters. This week, we're visiting a small town in the Northern Territory outback and meeting some of the young girls learning new skills as members of their local Girl Guides group. While Girl Guides are seeing declining numbers around the country, this group is flourishing. We'll hear about a father-daughter business venture turning salvaged timber into timeless wooden treasures, and we'll head into the shearing shed to learn about the program teaching high school girls the skills needed for a career in the wool industry.
There's been a big change over the last 15 years of women coming into agriculture. Because they're in that environment, they look at the shearing and say, oh yeah, we can give this a crack. So you're seeing an increase in number of women who are shearing, and they are shearing beautifully. There's some really successful women out there shearing. If you go to a lot of the competitions, you will just see how good they are.
No longer ducks on the pond, we'll meet some of the young women taking to shearing and making their mark in the industry. That's coming up. First today, the professional chef who's swapped working in high-pressure kitchens to teaching students all about how food gets from the paddock to the plate. He's instilling a love of food and cooking in the younger generation and says he's walked into his dream job. Emma Siosian has the story from the New South Wales mid-north coast.
Canadian-born professional chef Craig Stelmach is picking herbs from a kitchen garden and getting ready to lead a group of Year 5 and Year 6 students at Aldervilla Primary School west of Kempsey through a cooking session. Today's focus is a Mexican-inspired feast using produce from their garden.
Oh, it's all about that connection, you know, between food doesn't come in packets. It's, you know, it's grown, it has a season. And the kids understanding how that all works and having that connection to where food comes from, not just from the grocery store. There's someone who grows that food. So even if they're seeing a head of broccoli, they understand what a broccoli plant looks like, what the amount of work that goes into getting it. And sometimes, you know, when you have those little failures in the garden, it's that lesson of, you know, wow, that is really hard to grow. Make them appreciate it a bit more. So, yeah, I think that real appreciation of what goes into food so it doesn't get wasted.
Craig has previously worked in high-profile and high-pressure kitchens, and he's delighted to be in country New South Wales leading the Aldervilla School's kitchen garden and cooking program.
I did my apprenticeship under Chef Michael Smith. He's been on Chopped Canada, has his own cooking shows, that sort of thing. So yeah, I've definitely had my share of working in some high-profile kitchens. Worked up in Lizard Island in Australia, so one of the top three resorts in the world at the time. So it's, yeah, been around and loved every minute of it. I basically walked into my dream job. I love cooking, I love gardening. I've always had vegetable gardens and I've always had gardens in my kitchens that I've worked in commercially. So yeah, I'm over the moon.
Craig is taking over the program from Gay Dufty, who has been a driving force behind the program for the past decade. She also helped oversee the establishment of a very unique cooking space set up inside an old Sydney railway carriage. The carriage was originally transported to the school in the late 1990s and later transformed into the cooking space after the school secured a grant through the Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden Foundation in 2011. Gay says it's been highly rewarding to watch students embrace cooking and the use of fresh produce.
Well, it's basically that paddock to plate, and what a great concept that Stephanie Alexander has introduced along with the government in this sort of climate or atmosphere with the kids. You know, they can actually learn where food comes from and how they make it. It's just not bought off the shelf, etc. And it's not only that, it's a lot of that community connection as well. So we've actually brought that community spirit back, and it's allowed the kids and the families to enjoy it as well. So as you can see, we have already some of our grandparents here today to actually help with the cooking lessons. And we have parents, we have people that just heard that we've got this program in the school, they arrive. Prior to COVID, we had up to 200 volunteers a year. That's individual volunteers that have come in to help out with cooking. So more cooking than gardening, but very, very popular. I just did a count yesterday and we've got about 52 so far this year. So it's been a bit quieter, but in saying that, it's still a really good volunteer base.
How much pepper?
Keep stirring.
Hugh McNee loves taking part in the program with his granddaughter, Elizabeth.
We come to cooking regularly to do things. I like mixing with the kids and talking to them, and it's just good to interact with them. So we're putting the green stuff in next.
Craig Stelmack says he's already impressed by the focus of the budding young chefs.
The kids are amazing. The level they operate at, a lot of times is what I expect from my first year apprentices. You know, they're asking questions, they're engaged with what they're doing. You know, it's obviously there are things they can't do. Little hands aren't as strong as tough old mitts, but you know, they have a red hot go every time, and it's they've been amazing so far.
I think it's a great program because it teaches us new skills and we get to use all the ingredients from our garden to include it in all of our recipes, and we get to experiment with new flavors and tastes.
It's definitely different from our normal worksheets and stuff like that. I definitely think it's a perfect thing to have in a school, and definitely for all schools to have.
And as with all cooking, the real proof is in the tasting.
Oh, the food's great.
It's amazing.
Try a little bit of everything, it's excellent.
It tastes really good.
Up in the Warby Ranges near Wangaratta in northeast Victoria, Doug McGregor is showing me his wood collection.
They might be off of Council Road or out of people's backyards. So they come here and I mill them with this little Lucas mill. It's a baby Lucas. It's big enough for my purposes, our purposes.
Hi there, I'm Faith Tabaluyan and I'm chatting to Doug and his daughter Rachel. About 10 years ago, this father-daughter duo decided to start a business selling products they'd made from wood salvaged from across northeast Victoria.
I've been collecting wood for decades with a view to using it in retirement, so I've got, a backlog of timber, and you can see there's plenty here. It'll see me out and see Rachel out as well, I would think. Another good source of timber is recycled furniture. For example, this is a part of a church pew, and that looks like rubbish, but that's New Zealand kauri, which you cannot buy, and even in New Zealand you can't buy it anymore. I would cut that into strips and then collect the good strips and then glue them together and then end up with a usable piece of wood. So there's very little waste.
If Doug is the craftsman, Rachel's the creative director. She says sustainably sourced wood is at the heart of their business.
The beauty of getting it locally and from people's backyards is that you end up with this whole variety of timbers that other people don't necessarily have access to.
Mm.
So, you know, we've got beautiful specimen trees like Chinese elm or walnut or like chestnut, you know, that you can't buy commercially anyway. But because we can just do a small scale milling, yeah, we can use all those timbers. So yeah, it's really good, isn't it, that way?
Yes, and then
you get lots of different colours and textures, which people like.
But Doug says sustainability wasn't always on his mind.
I suppose my main motivating factor in the early days was to get cheap wood.
Yeah, very practical.
buying commercial wood is just, you can't then turn it into a product and sell it at any sort of profit. It just doesn't work. So,
yeah.
And then when Rachel and I decided to go into business together, she was the one that said, well, let's market the narrative of recycled and
Salvaged.
Yeah, correct.
Because that's important to me. Like I, as a consumer, if I went to a stall, I would want to know where that product came from and how it came to be on that stall. So for me, I want to know, and it's important that we're not chopping trees down. Like, I don't want to contribute to any kind of deforestation. Our business model is based on using up what we've got. And even at the end product, all the scraps and bits and pieces, we use that as well. So we might glue them up, or we might put them in the, you know, our wood fire Or we might, with the sawdust, we put it in the chook yard or around, you know, as a weed suppressant. So every part gets used up, and yeah, that's important to me. So it probably started for Dad as a necessity, but it's actually grown to be something that's important to our business.
Rachel and Doug now sell their salvaged wood products, including their popular yarn bowls, at farmers markets across Victoria. And while family and business don't always mix, Rachel and Doug make a top-notch team.
It's really interesting working with my dad. We are a bit similar in that we're both quite stubborn and and we're both quite assertive. So in this situation, it's been a real learning curve at times. But we've definitely, I feel like we, you know, we've had a few arguments about certain things, but we've come out the other side much stronger. And we did put it aside for a bit and think, oh, maybe we need a bit of a time out, but we both really missed it. And I really missed having the opportunity to spend time with my dad. And I missed the opportunity to learn the skills. Like, he's got 50-something years of skills under his belt, and he's a really good teacher as well. So being in the shed with him and being able to learn those skills has been just amazing. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we stuck with it.
And Doug, do you have anything to add what it's like working with your daughter?
Well, any parent would feel blessed, and that's the way I feel about it. And what Rachel said about we had our difficulties, certainly, but I think it was because of that we've come up with a really good understanding now. We sorted things out, which you can only do with a relative, probably. If we'd been strangers, I mean, if we'd been
business partners, or business,
we probably would have offended each other, and that would have been the end of it. So it's been fun.
Father and daughter woodworking duo Rachel Hogan and Doug McGregor, they were speaking with reporter Faith Tabaluyan in northeast Victoria. You can read more of Rachel and Doug's story. You'll find it on the ABC homepage at abc.net.au. Just look for A Big Country. I'm Clint Jasper with you for A Big Country. Still to come, we'll meet the high school girls who are getting a taste of the shearing industry. And around the country, Girl Guide groups have been in decline for decades. But in Tennant Creek in Northern Territory, leaders of the local Girl Guide say their group is thriving. The remote group is empowering girls and giving them a voice, in one case quite literally. Victoria Ellis has the story.
We are the Redback Guys. We come from different places. Stand together as one. We
have... Hi, my name is Paula.
Paula, how old are you?
12.
What is it that you like about Girl Guides?
Is that we can do some activities and patrol times.
Cool. How do you think that you've grown since you've started doing Girl Guides?
I learned to talk.
Did you speak very much before?
No.
And what changed?
Girl Guides. I wanted to talk to other girls.
Why is that?
Because some girls in Girl Guides are friends.
So you made friends by doing this?
Yep. Very special.
Give me a high five. Awesome. Good job.
My name's Jen and I live in Tennant Creek, and I am the proud mama of two girls and the Girl Guides, Paula and Nicole. I've been here 19 years.
Why did you want your daughters to be involved?
Well, girls are going to be our future leaders as well, so why not?
Your younger daughter, Paula, can you just tell me a little bit about her?
So Paula, up until she was 5, couldn't talk. So as soon as she was old enough to actually start guides, we actually put her in to help encourage her speech. She got forced to have to learn to speak because if she wanted to talk to her friends and guides, she needed to learn to talk. So, to communicate, socialise and everything else like that. All the leaders have been very supportive. They all knew that she had autism before she actually began. And all the other girls actually in the group actually helped to encourage Paula with her speech and everything as well. So it was probably the best decision I ever made.
Yeah, how do you feel to have seen that transition in her?
It was absolutely amazing. Even our specialist, her OT and her speech, you just can't get over how much she started growing once she started Girl Guides. So it's been a very, very magical little adventure for us. And couldn't be even prouder of her, like, honestly.
Do you think if Paula hadn't come to Girl Guides, she would be talking now?
She wouldn't be talking as good as she is now. Even with going to school and that, and with the support of the other students, obviously with the you know, you've got a group of kids here. Because it's a smaller group, there's a lot more focus on having to encourage Paula, whereas at primary school and that, and even the high school, you know, you've got anywhere in excess of 100 kids around her. So too much language all in one hit, whereas here people were able to do better explanations and, you know, getting her involved and explaining things that she explains back rather than trying to, more or less, try and get the attention through all the other kids. These guys here are really, really good for making sure that everyone has a voice and encouraging them to, you know, take part in everything.
The girls are just awesome. You see them flourish here, and they certainly develop their voice, which is what we're all about in Guides.
That's Kirstine Squires, one of the leaders of the Tennant Creek Girl Guides group.
So if they disagree with you, or they're not impressed, or they've got great ideas that they want you to take on board, they're quite happy to speak up and let us know.
And that's really great, isn't it? Because I think a lot of girls or young women do have trouble speaking up, being assertive, saying what they think, but you're creating a space where that's possible.
We actively push it. That, no, you use your voice.
Interrupting there is Sheila Walsh, the district manager for Tennant Creek Girl Guides.
And they have been, however, taught that it's how you use your voice. You chuck a tantrum and demand something, nothing doesn't work.
The Tennant Creek Girl Guides group is empowering and upskilling girls and young women, but it's also bucking a trend. Across the nation, girl guide participation rates have been steadily declining since the 1970s. At the moment, there are around 16,000 girl guides in Australia, but 5 years ago, that number was about 23,000. But according to Sheila, Tennant Creek Girl Guides is thriving.
How many girls do you have?
Currently on the database, we have about 30, but we have about 4 new ones that haven't filled in their forms and gone up on the database. And this is our second year of actually having waiting lists. So we have probably about 4 girls on the waiting list. And I've just had a text message from one of the other girls going, I've got a friend who might like to come along. Mum needs to talk to you. So, I'd say we're doing well.
Why do you think it's so popular?
A small town, not a lot of things to do. All the kids are at the same school, so they all talk about it, and this is what we did. And my leadership team, Kirstine, Debbie, Kelly, they are extremely good at coming up with some really innovative ideas and running it. I mean, our drones activity for the moment is, tonight is a good example of that.
It crashed.
My name's Regan and I'm 14 years old.
Ooh, Regan, whoa, what is this thing that's coming at me?
It's a drone, and we've been flying them around and learning how to, like, play with them and stuff and learning how to fly a drone.
My name's Cameron and I'm from Sydney, Australia, and I was born and raised there.
And now you live in the beautiful Tennant Creek. Tell me about this drone.
So we were flying it last night to deliver messages as the pigeons from the Anzac Day. I was running it with some other leaders, trying to get some nice photos to get girls to read messages that the pigeons would have delivered.
How cool is it that you get to use this technology now?
It's really fun.
Why do you like Girl Guides?
Because it's really fun and we get to hang out with friends and meet new people and other girls that come to town. And I really like the activities that we get to do when we get to have a voice about what we can do.
Why is that voice important to you?
So that the girls can be heard, because not sometimes other people look down on girls, and it's good for the girls to be heard.
We have mighty hearts, big hopes, big dreams, and big futures.
It's not too often you hear a round of applause in the shearing shed, but these 14 young women from Yanco Agricultural High School in southern New South Wales are learning to shear, and taking the belly wool off cleanly is the goal.
Learning all the different skills. I thought it would be a bit harder, but, like,
it's actually not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
It's a lot of hands-on and it's not so much theory, which is like a lot better than in class and school and stuff.
Now that you've had a go at it, do you think that you could see yourself taking up shearing as a profession?
Not as a profession, but I think as like a side job, or if I want some extra money, I'd do it.
So you're doing this shearing school and it's all girls. What's the advantage of that?
We all feel comfortable around each other and we're all supporting each other and, yeah, getting together.
We don't feel judged, and it's not, like, because it's such a male-dominated industry, having all girls just makes us feel a lot more comfortable about it.
Hello, I'm Emily Doak, and I'm here in the shed with these female students who are getting a taste of what the shearing industry has to offer. 2021 census data shows female shearers make up less than 5% of the workforce, but the industry says that number is continuing to grow. Yanko Ag High School teacher Fiona Edwards says opportunities like this shearing school are important to show what's possible.
Most of the time we do things that cater to all our students. So, getting an opportunity specifically for the girls is really great. I think a number of our girls probably wouldn't put their hand up to participate in a shearing school with all the boys as well. Often we see that they sort of sit back a bit and maybe don't participate as willingly. And there's a number of girls participating today purely because it is an opportunity just for them, and they can not feel as shy about having a go at something that's more of a male-dominated industry.
And you've been watching them on the board. How do you reckon they're tracking?
They're doing better than I would be. they're having a really good go at it, and they're very patient and working really well.
Do you think this would be a foot in the door for some of these women?
Definitely potential opportunity for them to get into the industry, yeah. Gives them skills that they wouldn't necessarily go for otherwise, and opens doors that they might not think of.
This shearing and wool handling school is part of an initiative between TAFE New South Wales and the Department of Education to give high school students skills and insight in rural careers. Head agriculture teacher at TAFE Primary Industry Centre in Wagga Wagga, Rob Harris, says there's a skills gap in the wool industry and training young people is important.
Young people coming in the industry is where it really starts. You know, there's no point someone like me going into the shearing industry now at my age. I might only be there for 5-10 years, whereas if you've got young people, they're fit, they're agile, they've got ability to be able to manoeuvre and learn and absorb those skills and that knowledge. It's really important at school age.
And this particular shearing school, it's all young women doing it, shearing and wool handling. How significant is that?
Oh, very significant. There's been a big change over the last 15 years of women coming into agriculture, and particularly if you look at the shearing sheds, a lot of women are in, particularly on the woolen side, and so they'll do all the wool handling. We have a lot of students doing wool classing. Because they're in that environment, they look at the shearing and say, oh yeah, I can give this a crack. And so you're seeing an increase in number of women who are shearing, and they are shearing beautifully. There's some really successful women out there shearing. If you go to a lot of the competitions, you will just see how good they are.
Bill Kimber spent 50 years as a shearer.
Big long blow right down the side.
And explains the approach to teaching is to focus on one part of the sheep at a time.
They done a day's crutching yesterday. Today we've started them on belly wools, and after lunch we'll start doing the hind leg and undermine. And the next day we'll start finishing off doing full sheep.
So a bit of a jigsaw puzzle to learn the basics to start with.
Yes, yeah. So if they learn a little bit at a time, they've got to learn how to get the comb on the skin and how to run their blows. So, yeah, it's just a slow process. If you teach them the right technique so they balance the sheep properly, well, the girls have got a good hand for the skin and a bit more eye for detail. Yeah.
So I understand you've been teaching shearing for a long time.
Yes.
What do you think about the initiative to get more high school students being trained in this way?
I think it's a great idea. If they get a go at it when they're younger, even if they don't take it up straight away, it's always a skill that you can come back to later on.
Bill Kimber, who's been teaching shearing at TAFE New South Wales, ending that story from Emily Doak. You'll find more on that story and all of the stories on today's program. Just look for the A Big Country program page on the ABC website at abc.net.au. That's the show for today. I'm Clint Jasper. Thanks for listening, and I'll chat to you again next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.